Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are unpacking a really incredible case study of software scaling.
Yeah, it's a fascinating one. We're looking at a developer's post titled From Jewelry to Everything, Building a Full Category Content Engine.
Right. And our mission for you today is pretty simple. We are exploring how shifting just one single mental model can take this, you know, very niche single-use application and turn it into a massive multi-category platform.
And not just massive, but operating with like 95% plus profit margins, which is kind of unheard of.
Oh, absolutely. So whether you're an engineer, a product manager, or honestly just someone trying to work a little smarter, this deep dive is just a masterclass in challenging your own assumptions.
It really is.
Okay, let's unpack this because the hook here is just wild. Imagine you built a successful AI tool, right? It generates 6 beautiful jewelry photos and all the marketing copy for 99 RMB.
Right, and it's working perfectly. You bypassed expensive cameras, the lighting, the retouchers. It's exactly what merchants want.
Yeah, you've got this great niche product. But then a friend looks at it and asks a question that basically shatters your entire approach.
Yeah, the friend just casually asks, why don't all categories get this full pipeline? I mean, isn't the infrastructure universal?
Which is such a light bulb moment.
Yeah.
Because the founder, Xichuan, initially had this very flawed mental model. They were treating every product category as a completely special case.
Exactly. The assumption was, well, jewelry prompts need to be super polished, right? But food prompts are rougher, so obviously we have to give food fewer features.
Right, walling everything
off. Yeah. But the friend's insight was profound. The machine doesn't actually know what a diamond is. It doesn't know what food is.
No, it's just processing data.
Right. The pipeline is exactly the same. The templates are the same. You just change the words you put inside them.
So to actually apply this universal infrastructure idea, the developer had to sit down and figure out what those 6 jewelry templates actually represented.
Because they weren't about photography at all, were they?
No. That was the huge breakthrough. It wasn't photography. It was psychology.
Right. If you name a slot constellation, that traps you into only doing jewelry. You can't do a constellation of like a leather sofa.
No, that would look ridiculous.
Right. So they broke it down into 6 angles of persuasion. Let's go through them.
Yeah, let's do it.
So slot 1, the hero shot, is actually just the first impression. Its job is just to make you stop scrolling.
Right, the hook.
Exactly. Slot 2 is the professional breakdown. Slot 3 is visual identity. Slot 4 is quality proof. Slot 5 is lifestyle context. And slot 6 is decision info.
I love this so much. It's like realizing you don't need to build a brand new factory just to make a new flavor of soda.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Right. Like the conveyor belts, the capping machines, the bottling line that is identical.
Yeah.
You don't touch the factory. You just swap out the flavor syrup.
And the syrup here is the text prompt you feed to the AI.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how did this actually map to different categories in the real world?
Well, let's look at food. In the jewelry version, slot 3 was called color DNA, and it made these nice watercolor washes.
Okay.
But the psychological goal of that slot is to show the process behind the product. Mm-hmm. So for food, that exact same slot became recipe steps.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, same slot, same purpose, but visually it's totally different. It shows raw ingredients becoming a plated dish.
That is so smart. And they did this thing, the Longchamp test, right?
Yes, the ultimate test of this system.
Right, because they wanted to see if this super editorial jewelry aesthetic would work on a fashion bag.
Mm.
So they took a Longchamp bag, which has, you know, nylon, cowhide leather, brass hardware.
Which is really hard for an AI to parse properly.
Yeah, but the AI brilliantly deconstructed it.
Yeah.
For that professional breakdown slot, it actually created this gorgeous material palette swatch card.
It zoomed right in on the nylon and the brass.
Exactly. Proving the aesthetic transferred perfectly. Oh, wait, I have to push back here for a second.
Okay, go for it.
I can see how this works for physical stuff. A bag, a necklace, food. But what about digital products?
Like a software course or something.
Yeah, exactly. Say I'm selling a Python course. There's no physical attributes to photograph at all.
Yeah.
How does an AI possibly figure out what a size reference looks like for a text-only software course?
That is the best part. It's actually a super elegant solution. Because for digital goods, size reference just translates to a pricing comparison card.
Oh, I see.
Right, because the psychology of that slot is decision info. So it compares the course cost versus, say, a coding bootcamp.
That makes total sense.
And for that constellation slot, the AI just generates a visual mind map of the curriculum. It has the creative freedom to just generate abstract art from a text description.
Okay, so the universal pipeline works. They've perfected these 6 persuasive images for literally any category.
Right, but here is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, because they looked at what actually converts on platforms like Xiaoxu.
Yeah.
And they realized beautiful photos alone just weren't enough.
No, they weren't, which led to the most surprising discovery of this entire build.
Yeah, the irony here is amazing. In a cutting-edge AI product, the absolute most valuable feature doesn't actually use any new AI.
Exactly. It was the text cards. If you look at the top-selling 9 image carousels on Xiaohongshu, they interleave like 3 or 4 product photos with 5 or 6 text cards.
Right, things like selling points, buying guides, FAQs.
And literally every competitor in the space was ignoring this. They were just focused on making shinier AI photos.
So how did they build it? You mentioned the engineering for this was really elegant.
Yeah, they use a Satori-based rendering pipeline. So React GSX defines the layout.
Like an architect's blueprint.
Right, exactly. Then Satori comes in and converts that layout into an SVG, a scalable vector.
Okay, so Satori is like the drafter drawing the lines.
You got it. And finally, a tool called Sharp converts that vector into an exact dimension PNG file, like a digital printing press.
But the crazy part is the cost, right?
Oh, the cost is absolute zero.
Oh, really? Zero.
Zero marginal cost. Because the Gemini API already analyzed the product image in step one. It already extracted the selling points and the materials.
Oh, so the data is just sitting there in memory.
Exactly. It's pure server-side templating. They just stamp that existing data onto the text cards. No extra AI calls at all.
That is just brilliant.
Yeah.
And they also solved that huge headache of cropping, didn't they?
Yeah, the platform-aware output. Sharp just auto-crops everything based on a simple drop-down menu.
So if I want to post on Xiaohongshu, it's a 3:4 ratio.
Yep. Douyin is 9:16. Taobao is 1:1. The user just selects it and the system handles the rest. Huge UX win.
Think about your own workflows for a second or your own business. Are you trying to invent complex new solutions when the most valuable missing piece might just be a zero-cost repackaging of data you already have?
Right. We get so caught up in the shiny new tech, we forget the basic utilities that actually drive sales.
Okay. So they have the static carousels totally perfected. But e-commerce moves fast. Now everything is moving to video.
Which is a massive problem for them.
Yeah, because server-side video rendering would completely destroy those incredible 95% profit margins.
Oh, it would wreck them. Video requires so much compute power.
So how do they get around it?
They shifted the compute entirely to the user. It's a brilliant workaround. They used Remotion Player for zero cost in browser previews.
Okay, so you can see the video playing in your browser tab without hitting their servers.
Exactly. But then to actually make the final video file, they used ffmpeg.wasm.
WebAssembly.
Right. It compiles the 13-second MP4 directly on the user's laptop right inside the browser.
So no cloud render farms.
No render farms, no server queues, nothing. What's fascinating here is that strategic decision to push the computation cost onto the client's machine.
You're basically trading a few seconds of encoding time on the user's end for literally zero infrastructure overhead on your end.
Yes. The unit economics are just staggering. They charge 99 RMB for something that replaces, you know, maybe 1,100 to 3,100 RMB of human labor.
And it's almost purely profit because of these architectural choices. But wait, I got to play devil's advocate here. It sounds like they were kind of flying by the seat of their pants to get to this point. Is a platform actually scalable if it's held together by duct tape?
That is such a fair question. And the developer was very honest about this in their devlog. They did a code base sweep and found 22 separate issues.
22?
Yeah. And 8 of them were critical, like major security flaws.
Oh, wow. Like what?
Well, they were using math.random for their invite codes.
Uh-oh. That is not secure.
No, it's really not. It's completely predictable if you know the pattern. You need cryptographically secure generation for that, or people can just bypass your paywalls.
Right. What else did they find?
They had an SSRF vulnerability in the image upload flow.
Wait, SSRF server-side request forgery?
Exactly.
Right.
If a user provided a malicious link, the server could be tricked into fetching internal private files from the company's own network and handing them over.
That is a nightmare.
Total security nightmare. And they had reliability bugs, too. There was a Zustan stale closure that kept freezing the progress bar. Oh, I hate that. When the app is actually working in the background, but the UI is just stuck at like 33%.
Yeah. It completely ruins the user's trust in the product.
And then there was an async race condition with FFmpeg.
Let me guess. It was trying to compile the video before the frames were fully rendered.
You nailed it.
On slower machines, it caused completely corrupt videos.
Wow. So fixing all of that took it from basically a fragile demo to a bulletproof business.
Exactly. The unsexy work is what actually lets you scale.
Okay, so what does this all mean for you? Let's synthesize this deep dive into three major takeaways.
Sounds good.
First, don't vary your pipeline per category. Vary the prompts. You have to find that universal structure in your work.
Right. Second, the most valuable feature you build might actually have zero marginal cost.
Mm-hmm.
Don't overlook the simple text cards just because the AI generation is flashier.
Exactly. And third, move computation to the client whenever possible. Leverage WebAssembly.
Because scaling 10x doesn't always require 10x the effort or the server costs. It just requires a structural shift in how you view your inputs and outputs.
I love that.
And I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We talked about how they pushed video rendering to the user's browser to save money, right?
Yeah.
Well, look at our phones and laptops today. They are getting incredibly powerful with neural engines and AI chips built right in.
Well, that's true.
So what happens when all AI computation moves to the client side?
Wow.
Right. Will the most profitable software companies of the next decade simply be selling brilliant prompt pipelines and rendering architectures? They could be operating massive global businesses with effectively zero server costs.
That is a crazy thought.
Yeah.
It really makes you rethink the entire SaaS business model. Thank you so much for exploring this with me, and thank you all for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.